Your voice is better in there than mine.
Elsie Hornbacher is recording for the Women's Overseas Service League. Betty Leiby is being interviewed on her experience overseas. My address is 2114 Meadow Lane Drive, Lansing, Michigan, and the telephone number, the area code is 517, and the number is 321-2453. I can be located at this number at any time. This is for the Lansing unit of the Women's Overseas Service League. The date is November 21st, 1985. Betty's address is 6091 Brookhaven Lane, number 33. That's apartment number 33 in East Lansing, Michigan. The zip is 48823. Her telephone number with the area code 517 351-2518. Go ahead, Betty. First of all, Betty, generally, where were you born?
I was born in St. Clair, Michigan.
And what were your parents' names? The maiden name of your mother and then her married name.
Mother's maiden name was Louise Simmons, and my father's name was Benjamin Isom, I-S-O-M. He was born in Atlanta. My mother was born in Bay City, and I left. I was born in St. Clair, but lived in Detroit for my 23 years prior to going overseas with the Red Cross.
Mm-hmm. You said Atlanta, Atlanta?
Georgia.
Georgia, I see. Well, I guess you can go ahead with your experiences overseas. Roughly, what gave you the idea to go overseas?
My job, I was the secretary for Lieutenant Randolph M. Smith, and then was promoted to, I was in charge of personnel for the Tool and Equipment Division of the Office Chief of Ordnance in Detroit. I was 23. I had a secretary who was 25. We discussed travel a great deal, and she advised me one day that Red Cross would be interviewing people, and she wanted to go. And of course, I did too. I had a super job, but this was so exciting. They did say that on a rare occasion they would pass an age waiver. You were supposed to have 2 years of college or business experience equivalent to that to be acceptable. Well, I certainly had the business experience.
This was in the Detroit area?
In the Detroit area.
Mm-hmm.
So we went in, and they kept calling me back. Poor Anna was not called back. She wasn't accepted, and I said nothing to the colonel. I said nothing to my mother. I never dreamed they would take me because of my age.
How old did you have to be?
25, and I was 23.
Mm-hmm.
I got a letter on March 16th of 1945 that said that I had been accepted, that I would be sent to Washington for 2 weeks training.
1945, the war is almost over.
Yes, that's right. And for 2 weeks training at the American University. So on April 16th, 1945, that's where I went. Hmm. And to the... we sold the house. The colonel was angry. Everything was sad there. I had a lot to do in 1 month.
House.
The house that Mother and I had.
I see.
And she went to St. Charles to live with her sister. And so we were in Washington for 2 weeks at the American University. It was lovely. I met a lot of nice gals. And then 12 of us were sent to Langley Field for extension training. And 8 of us were recalled the very next day of the 12, and off we went to the New York port of embarkation in Brooklyn. We were there a couple of nights, and they gave us one free night. We went into Times Square and went into Jack Dempsey's, 4 of us. Jack Dempsey was in there, and Gene Autry. We got their autographs, quite exciting.
Oh.
And we were in our Red Cross uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
Then we were shipped out on the SS Argentina to England. That was in convoy, and it took 14 days, zigging and zagging overseas, and went into London, and we were in London several days and received our assignment, and I went to Hanley, Stoke-on-Trent, that's in the Midlands of England, in the Pottery District, and I was there until the club closed. I had got a new club director while there, Marion Carroll, who was a charming, wonderful friend, the Red Cross club director before was shipped back to the States, and we used to take the boys on tours of the Pottery District. Wedgwood and Minton and Spode were closed at that time.
Betty, roughly, was that a big base?
Stone was on the outskirts. It was an air base, and
mm-hmm.
The club was a very busy one. It was 3 floors. We served meals on the 3rd floor.
I see.
We had a band played there, and the boys had to register their dates the night before and bring them in to dance, and it was a busy, busy club. I took a tour, some of the boys to Stratford on Avon on a tour, and we always kept them busy.
You roughly would have several hundred there at a time?
Oh, yes.
Oh, I
oh,
see.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it was, and then Stone was the closest base.
You would have quite a personnel in the club.
We had the Red Cross director and 3 Red Cross girls at the beginning, and then that we were down to 2 Red Cross girls, but we did have quite a staff of British people. We had a lovely lady, Mrs. Llewellyn Leach, who obtained the hostesses for the dances, and we had a lot of the ladies up in the cafeteria area. They did have a habit of putting the gravy all over the whole dish when the boys went through the line, they complained about that, but that's the way they eat their food over there. And
they didn't make a little hole for it to go into, did
no,
they?
No, they did not. They put the gravy over everything, so
mm-hmm.
we asked them to just confine it to the potatoes. We did give free donuts, contrary to a lot of the discussions by the boys that they had paid for their donuts. We did give free donuts, and that seemed to be a policy that the commanding general of an area doled out. That was his idea of what should be sold and what should be paid for in the Red Cross. We were in the Red Cross until, of course, the war ended, and little by little, the need for the Red Cross there was stopped, and so Marion and I closed the club, my club director and I. The other gal had been sent along. We went. They gave us time. We had an English Hillman, van, and they gave us about a week to get back to London, and so consequently we drove down through Wales and took in quite a lot of England on the way back. It was very nice. I should also say that while we were there, putting in 14 hours a day, we were given a leave, a 3-day leave on occasion. Marion and I, how this was arranged, I can't remember, but Marion and I flew into Dublin, which was the Irish Free State. Marion had been in the theater, had acted a bit, and her desire was to attend plays at the see the Abbey Players. They were Plough and the Stars was there. Eileen Crowe was the leading lady. After the performance, which was very nice, we went behind the stage and met Eileen Crowe and the other members of the cast. And Eileen Crowe invited us to tea the next day at the Royal Hibernian. It was very nice of her. On top of that, the few days we were there.
You said the Royal Hibernian?
Royal Hibernian Hotel.
The hotel.
Mm-hmm. The hotel there.
Mm-hmm.
And we had steak there at our meals, you know. That was the Irish Free State. They had really excellent food. We were invited to a big ball. Everyone informal, and there we were in our Red Cross uniforms. They just treated us like we were royalty. I ended up on the stage drawing the tickets for the grand prize. And the Irish were very charming to us. That was an exciting experience there. But anyway, our leaves were interesting, and we took in as much of England on leaves as we could, and we visited other Red Cross girls in other areas, our friends. When we got back to England, then we were shipped out to Paris. When we got into Paris, we weren't quickly assigned. We had little time there, and we were allowed a 7-day leave to Switzerland. And actually, we were in Paris on New Year's Eve, which is...
This is
1945.
45.
And in January 8th of 1946, we went into Wiesbaden, Germany, for our definite assignment, and then were immediately sent out to Fürth, Germany. They sent us in a mail truck driven by a Frenchman named George, and he could speak very little English, and we had quite a time. Wouldn't you know, the truck would break down on the outskirts of Dinkelsbühl. People gathered around us like we were...
Now, Dinkelsbühl is near what other big city? Munich?
It's about
Nuremberg?
Halfway between Wiesbaden and Fürth.
Oh.
It's one of my favorite
Wurtenberg.
Little cities there,
mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
And, in fact, I've returned there. Yeah. But anyway, the people gathered around as though we were most unusual people. There we were in our Red Cross uniforms, and all I could say was, Manger, George, and we took he had rations, so we had to eat them there. We were hungry. Along came a jeep with two GIs.
Mm-hmm.
They said, come along, we'll take care of this. So we went into Dinkelsbühl, and there was a unit there.
That's not too far from France, is it?
No.
So your Germans would be able to understand a little French, wouldn't they?
Well, I don't know that they did. I wasn't aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the boys took care of George, and we never did see George until they were towing the truck behind their convoy going into Fürth. So we arrived in a convoy again, going into Fürth, with all the boys veering out of their way somewhat to get us there, mm-hmm. and our truck being towed with George in it. We got into Fürth. It was a nice club. I was in program at that time. I had started as a staff assistant and then was a program director. We got into Fürth. We were the 53rd base quartermaster depot was closely affiliated with this with Fürth, so we ate with them in the Park Hotel. And because the war had ended, they still, as a matter of fact though, when we went into Germany, they still had the wire cutters on the front of the jeeps, because every often they'd string a rope or wire across the road and decapitate someone.
Did you experience that?
No,
and
of course
did
we didn't.
Did you use them?
Mm-hmm. Well, they were on the jeeps, but ultimately they were removed. But
mm-hmm.
There was no animosity shown except by the children who would make faces or something when
at
we go
Americans?
By.
The,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you have them holler anything at you? Like
no, they never helped.
American go home?
No, none of that.
Mm-hmm.
And as they say, when we were in Fürth, the club was a nice club, and we did a lot of good there, but the war was over, and the boys then, I think, were eager to get home, eager to travel and enjoy without all the nervousness of the war.
The boys were free to do whatever they wanted
yes,
to,
they
except
absolutely
that they slept there?
Yes, that's
mm-hmm.
right. That's
mm-hmm.
right. And they would come into the club, there's no doubt about that, but they weren't interested in our activities that much. It was just a place to maybe...
I can understand that.
Yes.
But
They were eager.
More interested in meeting the girls in Germany.
The girls,
and
you
having
bet.
A good time and whooping
that
it up.
That is absolutely true.
Was their behavior fairly reasonable?
I would say so. You
maybe
always get some
drinking?
That, yes, uh-huh. You always get some that are a little out of hand, and of
mm-hmm.
course that the ugly American started then, I'm sure.
Right.
But 53rd Quartermaster, they needed civilian personnel to work for them, and if they had a lot of work to do at the end of the war,
mm-hmm.
a quartermaster based depot would. I had been in personnel, and Marion Carroll had, well, to some extent too. So I was hired in, and I was asked to recruit, travel and recruit. And of course, I had to write to the American Red Cross and be relieved of my duty. And
to travel and recruit
Civilian personnel who were leaving, like nurses in
mm-hmm.
depots who were could go home,
oh,
or
yes.
Red Cross
mm-hmm.
who were going home, or Army. Personnel.
And you had to replace them, is this it?
I would hire them to work for 53rd Quartermaster
in
a civilian capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And I received a letter from our adjutant general that I'd take with me, and he said, should any American civilian employee be available for transfer from your headquarters, Miss Isom is authorized to interview and accept for the commanding officer, 53rd Quartermaster Base Depot, those individuals who are willing to transfer here and whose services could be used by this depot.
Oh, then you interviewed people
yes,
who were
I did.
In Germany.
Yes.
Is this
not
it?
Necessarily.
In,
no, I
in
traveled
Europe. Mm-hmm.
In Europe.
I
flew
see.
Back to England on one occasion.
I see.
And I went into Holland, and I was all over in my
Europe.
My work. I was
mm-hmm.
traveling constantly.
Oh, I can understand
and,
that. Now, we were, the teachers were interviewed in the United States.
Oh, were they?
And then we were shipped over.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose there were a few that may have been like the wives of servicemen overseas.
That's right.
They were interviewed there.
Yes. Now, some of the Red Cross girls wanted to stay in this capacity, and one of them, well, several of them traveled with me when I
mm-hmm.
would go out on interview. Connie Goff and I went back to Paris, and Red Cross, they were very nice to us. We were allowed to stay in the Normandy Hotel in Paris. It was a Red Cross hotel, and we in our civilian uniforms, there were civilian officers' uniforms is what they were.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
we
were allowed to stay there.
The average civilian wouldn't know what we mean by Red Cross hotel.
Oh, yes. Well, it was a billet. It was a place that that housed Red Cross, and it was called the Normandy, and it was
In an occupation force, we take over the major building and the
yes.
buildings we need.
We need for our personnel.
And it's a part of reparations for the Germans to pay us.
That's right.
So actually, we had very nice places to live overseas.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And it was a nice location, nice hotel. As I say, I had stayed there before in my Red Cross uniform. This time it was in civilian
mm-hmm.
uniform. And like I said, when I did write to the Red Cross, I received an honorable discharge in January 29th of 46. And from that point to the time that I sailed home on the George W. Balthus, I had served with the 53rd Quartermaster. During that time, Fürth is just adjacent to Nuremberg. I was able to attend the war trials, which was the outstanding
part
of it.
What was the building like where the war trials were held?
It was a very large building, and it was not too far from, well, Nuremberg was practically flattened. It really was a flattened area. It stood out like a sore thumb. It was a very large building, and how it stayed intact.
It was an older building, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, an older building, very
fact,
large.
I was not impressed with it when
no,
I saw it.
It wasn't.
I think the seats looked hard.
Oh, yes, they were.
Were they chairs or were they benches?
There were benches.
Benches.
We came, when we were, we made the entrance, they took everything away from us,
mm-hmm.
everything. And we sat, and they had headphones, and you could dial in to the to the English language. Now, the Germans were the prosecutors when the Russians were the prosecutors when I was there.
Oh, I see.
But there was Goebbels and Goering and Hess and all of them sitting there.
Were you allowed to take pictures in there?
Not at all. We took everything away from them. No pictures.
I see.
No pictures. Mm-hmm. And no purse, no anything.
Mm-hmm.
Goering.
Could you take notes?
No, had nothing. Goering, his uniform hung on him. He had lost so much weight.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the one who took his life in prison.
Oh, yes.
We also, the MPs, officers, took us into the Grand Hotel where all the legal authorities were staying for the trial.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very interesting. It was a very busy place. A lot of people there were involved with that trial. We also went to Berchtesgaden and went up to the Eagle's Nest. That was quite a view up there. I have movies taken of me up there. There was nothing up there. One great big oak table, and I think every GI officer, American personnel, had their name on there somewhere. Mine's on too.
Mm-hmm.
Why be different? And we went through the apartment that was on the way up to that in the mountain. There was nothing in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved Berchtesgaden. It's magnificent.
I did too. I don't
loved
think there's
there.
A more beautiful
no.
sight in the world.
I loved it. I stayed mm-hmm. at the Berchtesgadener Hof when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
That is still military. Because
it
when
still
I
is?
Yes,
you
because
mean
I
now in 1985.
Yes. Well, I don't know about 85, but when I was there 5 or 6 years ago,
oh, in 80?
I retraced my steps and went there and thought I would stay. I loved that hotel.
Mm-hmm.
I have two napkins with a swastika in them from there. Linen napkins.
Could you stay there?
No, it was military. No,
uh-huh.
No way. I was a civilian, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But my travels over there were most interesting, and the people I met and the conditions and all, it was an outstanding experience in my life to have been there. I might have stayed longer even had my mother not been ill, and I got word and I had to leave. Marion Carroll stayed over much longer, and she stayed and taught, because of her theatrical experience, taught some of the German children, young teens.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember
you
what
don't
city.
Know the
I can't.
City.
I forgot mm-hmm. the city. Isn't that awful?
Okay.
And
no,
she taught, and she put on Abie's Irish Rose, and they did
oh.
a magnificent job of it. They said
oh, wonderful.
She did a good job. She was an outstanding person.
Mm-hmm.
We got into also, had trips into Rome, got into Rome, did a lot of traveling, and of course in my capacity, I certainly did. I spent, as I say, New Year's Eve in Paris, Christmas in Switzerland, and Easter in Holland.
Mm-hmm.
And that was quite an I couldn't have asked for a better situation, especially with the war having been over.
At that time, were the Germans impoverished?
When we would receive our rations, the little children would come around and want cigarettes or whatever we could give them, candy, and we always did give them something.
I understand
ones.
After the war they were eating out of garbage cans.
So I never saw that. I never did. And of course, had a lovely room on the Bahnhofstrasse in a house. It was sort of a house, and a German family took care of us.
Mm-hmm.
They were very lovely to us. They certainly weren't impoverished, and the people that we were dealing with, we took care of, I guess, because I never saw that. I really did not see that, except for the children begging when we would go to the...
This would vary in parts of Germany,
would
it?
I would certainly think so.
Mm-hmm. I have friends that were in... East Berlin.
Oh, yes.
And they did get to the West, but from what I gather, it was pretty rough.
It was rough, oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure that, and I talked with some of the older people there, and there was nothing they could do at the end. It was just doomsville for them. They felt it. They could see it coming. He was way out of line at the end. They had nothing to... They knew that he had gone just entirely too far with the whole thing.
I understand that they did not particularly support Hitler on an individual basis.
They did not.
If they felt like doing something, they did it. Now, I believe the Americans actually were willing to give their life for our country. But the Germans, I understand, did not behave that way.
No, they did not. I went to one of the trips I made was to Dachau. And that was an awful thing to see there. And of course, there.
Now, you saw this in what year?
In 46. So you know that when I walked into.
In 53 or 54.
And when I walked into the room, it would knock you over with the stench.
Odor, you still smell.
And the blood stains on the wall and where they had piled bodies. It was an appalling.
I came home
place.
And was sick to my stomach
well,
after being
be.
There for a day.
You could be, and that was in 46, so you can imagine.
And I was there in 53 or 4.
I passed a camp where they had prisoners, and there were the SS, cream of the crop in the camp, and they looked pretty desolate in there.
Mm-hmm.
They were by the fence and looking out, and I'm sure they all were very feeling very poorly at the time, and I'm sure they didn't all want to follow him to the end. As you say, they had their own opinions, and that was the way it was. It's a shame that it had to, so many lives were lost. But I came back through Bremerhaven and came back on a Liberty ship. It was a bride ship, actually. They had all the French brides and all the brides on the top, and the Red Cross were down the hold in the others. And there was the roughest crossing. Two of us ate in the dining room. Two of us out of that whole ship. I have my sea legs. And then I didn't quite have them after breakfast one morning. It was a miserable crossing.
Was this just rough weather, or was
it? Was
it
rough. Rough seas. It was a Liberty ship is not as seaworthy as some of them. It's kind of a round bottom, like a cork out there. And
there's quite a difference in traveling in ships.
Indeed.
Because I was in one of the better ships, and in the eye of a typhoon, we were adrift at sea for two days. And fortunately, I wasn't seasick.
See?
But going over another time to Europe, we were in a smaller ship, which rocked and rolled on the Atlantic, and I was icky all during the passage.
Oh, yes. Well, on the crossing, the convoy of 14 days, we zigged and we zagged. There were girls who never got out of the bunk. And it was the smoothest crossing you can imagine. So some people, just the slightest motion is upsetting to them. I flew back from Ireland on the Aer Lingus line. Everyone on that plane was sick, air sick, and I wasn't. Had we not landed when we did with all the commotion around me, I think I might have joined them. That was the roughest plane ride I ever had.
The plane dived and...
Well, it was a bouncing affair. And they had the airbags, and they were all being used. But it was a nice airplane. It wasn't as large as the Mavars.
Do you remember the name of the medication we could take to prevent seasickness back then?
No, because I never had to take it.
I took some along, and as I remember, I took one time.
Did you? I've never had to, knock on wood, had to take them. But as I say, the best, it was a marvelous year and a half that I served, and I met some lovely people, and some not so lovely, but I did meet mostly were lovely people, and it was an experience. And I know the boys, I have letters from the boys that loved our club, loved the service that we rendered, and they... when Marion Carroll came as club director, that really put that club on the map. The boys loved that club. She just went out of her way to help and do and serve, and that was why we were there.
Now, your boys were roughly between the age of 18 and 30, probably?
Yes, yes. Yes, they were. I do know that if the war had been on our ground and the foreign boys were serving over here, they wouldn't have acted any differently than our boys, I'm sure. Boys will be boys.
People are the same all over the world.
Yes, they are. Yes, they
are. I know many people thought, well, you're going overseas. People will be doing things over there that they don't do home. This is not true.
No, that is not true.
One's behavior is pretty well established regardless of where you are, and you have your own limits.
Absolutely.
And you can't, I mean, even back home, if a person suffers unusual emotional turmoil, they may take they may drink for a mild period of time and then give it up.
That's right.
The permanency of irrational behavior is usually short.
I think so. And of course, under the stressful
duration.
Situation,
mm-hmm.
during a war, they're going to do things to excess.
Yes.
Their freedom will be expressed in that manner. They'll be do things that they wouldn't do if in peaceful times.
That's for sure.
Maybe they weren't going to be around the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Right.
I have...
Overseas, I don't think they cover as much for their behavior as they do home.
No.
At home, they're more sneaky about it.
That's right.
But overseas, they don't give a darn who
they
knows what they do
don't.
Because they're not going to see them 6 months from now.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
This is the only difference. It's...
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are a lot of episodes, little interesting, wonderful episodes, and interesting episodes, but then I think I've covered pretty much.
Fraternization was discouraged at this time, though. Did you have much contact with the Germans?
No, I really did not, except in the where I was billeted, and on my travels on occasion, and but I did not. I did not have much contact. Consequently, I did not really pick up the language much. I didn't have occasion to use it that much. I had more occasion to use it when I went back 5 or 6
years. You went to Dachau, Betty.
Yes, I did. Of course, it was, you know, the war ended just after, you know, before I got into Germany, so it was so sad and so discouraging to go in there. The blood marks up on the wall where the bodies had been piled, and the chambers and all. It was quite an experience.
You know, Betty, I have asked many a German about Dachau, and they said they didn't know it existed.
A lot of them did not.
I couldn't talk to a German or an Austrian who recognized the fact that this was taking place. And then I began to wonder, around Lansing, I'm sure there's a slaughterhouse. I would have no concept of where it is or that there even was one.
Mm-mm. They did not know it existed, that's for sure. Anyone that I talked with didn't know.
This was common then,
mm-hmm.
for every person I have talked to.
Right, right. And,
however,
there
they should have known
places.
That the Jewish people were disappearing.
Absolutely, by the thousands. It was, and Dachau was just one of many places.
Yes, it was one of about 4 or 5,
oh,
wasn't
yes,
it?
Oh, uh-huh. Yes, and it wasn't the worst one.
I see.
So it was so awful to see that,
mm-hmm.
to know that that went on. But like you said, a lot of them did not know what was going on.
Well, we didn't know what went on in the
no.
war either, let's face it.
No.
I mean, on the individual basis.
Like I, when we first went into Germany, I mentioned the wire cutters on the jeeps. You know, some of our men had been decapitated. They'd string a wire across the road,
oh,
a thin
I see.
Wire, and they'd
mm-hmm.
be going along in a jeep. Well, that would just cut their head off.
Ooh.
And it wasn't until, you know, for several months before that was, they were removed.
Mm-hmm.
We had, now the Autobahn, oh, how many times I went on the Autobahn. That was quite a road.
Mm-hmm. That was as good as any highway we had in the United
absolutely.
States at that time.
I'll never forget the feeling I had one day on the Autobahn. It was raining, and I passed a clearing on the right-hand side. I had a driver, and I was sitting in the Jeep coming back from Munich,
mm-hmm.
München, and there was a German plane with a tail up in the air with a swastika on the tail,
mm-hmm.
that had crashed in that clearing, and it was raining, and it was so, it brought everything right there. the war, and that's it. There's the end, right there in that field.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a dismal, miserable day. And a lot of my trips were via motor car, you know, going into the various cities in Germany to recruit Americans, nurses, and people to work in a civilian capacity for the 53rd Quartermaster. Marion Carroll remained over longer than I. My mother was ill, and that's why I came home when I did. So off I went to Bremerhaven, and oddly enough, I came home on a bride ship out of Bremerhaven, and I was down in the lower decks, and the brides were up on the top.
Was this in the winter time that you came home?
Yes, it was the George W. It was in the fall. George W. Goffel's was the Liberty ship.
Mm-hmm.
It was the roughest crossing you can imagine. But having, in my youth, being raised in Detroit, and we had a boat, a cruiser, and I was used to rough water. There, two of us ate in the dining room. We would have breakfast, just two of us on that whole ship. Everyone was sick.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a, had a lower bunk, and we were three high, and I exchanged with a girl so that I wouldn't get.
Mm-hmm.
And we, so few of us took showers. You were just bounced all over the place.
Hmm. Was it a big ship or a little one?
It was a smaller Liberty ship. It's more of a round bottom type of ship, and it's just
the bigger ships are
better. However, on the crossing going over, which was fairly smooth, we had some girls who were seasick. They're just the listing, slight listing. Even we had the blackouts and all.
I never had any problem with seasickness in the Pacific. I did. I was icky, though, most of the time, going across the Atlantic by ship.
Were you?
Uh-huh.
Coming back from Ireland, Marion had returned before I did. I was out at the Salt Hill Hotel in Monkstown on the outskirts. I stayed a little longer. And when I flew back on Aer Lingus, prior to boarding the plane, there was an Irishman said, would you like to join me for a beer, you know, and I said, and I had just eaten a candy bar, and he was a friendly, nice gentleman, and I had a beer with him, so we boarded the plane, and oh, what a rough flight that was. It was a single-seater type, you know, one on each side. He sat across the aisle from me. I think everyone on the plane was ill on that plane. I was writing, and I asked him for a pen, and he just had an awful time. He was groping for that pen. He was so ill. If we hadn't landed when we did, I would have joined him. But he had used the phone booth before, prior to my using it. I had to back out of it. It was so, the stench.
Mm-hmm.
I had to call for my transportation, but it was, I flew it back into Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
The very interesting part of my year and a half overseas was that I spent New Year's Eve in Paris, Christmas in Switzerland, and Easter in Holland.
Oh, wonderful.
I was on a business trip to Rotterdam, and I took the train up through Harlem, and tulips as far as you can see on either side. And one thing they do not do in Holland, and I quickly learned that, you do not make a corsage there. You do not cut those flowers and make a corsage. They frown on that.
Oh.
I learned that. But the time I was in England, I picked up, you pick up a lot of the accent. And of course, in the Midlands, the Cockney accent is tolo. very difficult to understand at times, you know, and but you're bound to pick it up. And when I first checked in, their terminology, when I first signed in at the hotel, the man at the desk said to me, what time shall I knock you up in the morning? And that was rather
what time
surprising.
Shall they what?
What time shall I knock you up in the morning?
Knock you up in the morning.
And that over here is something entirely different. The expression on my face changed his terminology there.
great.
You learn a lot of their, and of course the elevator's a lift, and you know, there's so many things they say a little differently than we do. And I do know that some of the British weren't too happy with our Americans overseas. I was in London and went into a little bookshop, and two GIs had just left the shop. They didn't see me and my Red Cross uniform, looking at some books in the corner, and the woman said, "I'll be so terribly glad when these Americans leave." And I stepped around the corner and I said, "But aren't you so happy that we helped you?"
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I do believe that if the war had been fought on our land and we had a bunch of foreign soldiers over here who didn't know whether they were going to live another day,
mm-hmm.
Their actions wouldn't be any different than our boys' actions were over there.
Mm-hmm.
They were, it takes all types most places. Some were out of line, of course, but basically I thought we had some fine young men over there. I have a lot of letters from them that were thanking us for what we did for them in the club. I loaned them money. I never had it returned, you know, they were shipped
uh-huh.
out. And I did have a funny experience there, though, in the club. And the only bad experience, I might say, that disappointed me with a soldier. I was in my office in the club, and a little fellow came in, and it was right after they had been in Paris, and they shaved the heads of some of the women and stole their clothes. He said, "I have a mink coat that I would like you to have." I said, "You're kidding." He said, "Now I can rent an apartment over here." I said, "You can you?" I said, "What are you implying?" He said, "Well, I'd like you to have the coat." I said, "But what, that something goes along with the coat, isn't there?" And that was what he was implying. I said, "There are a lot of girls that hang around this club around the corner there. Go and give that coat to one of them."
Mm-hmm.
That was very insulting, very bad.
Yes, I could understand.
And that was the only experience along that line that I had, other than the knocking on the door.
Now, you mentioned the reaction of the Englishmen toward the Americans. Did you have any outward disapproval of the Americans being in Germany?
No, I did not, personally. As I said, my association there in Germany was mostly with the Americans, other
mm-hmm.
than where I was
yeah, I
living.
Yeah, I can understand.
And we weren't, mm-hmm. there was no reason much to have the association.
In Austria, of course, Trieste fell while I was there,
mm-hmm.
and the Russians would spit at us.
Oh, yes. Now, when I was at the Grand Hotel, Connie and I were there with the officers had taken us in, so they
mm-hmm.
could see it was quite a privilege to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
There were some Russians at the next table. I could see the pajama bottom sticking out of the pant leg of the one.
Mm-hmm.
He came over and asked Connie to dance.
Mm-hmm.
She had no desire to dance
mm-hmm.
with him, and she refused. And they
Is
were
this
almost
in Germany?
Yes, it was in Germany.
This would be a terribly insult.
Yes,
I never realized that in the social strata in Germany is just the reverse of ours.
Well, this was a Russian. A Russian asked her to dance.
Oh yes, but in Germany,
oh, yes.
in Germany, if you refuse to, you go to a place to have fun.
Yes.
And if you don't dance with those people who ask you, I experienced that. If you don't dance with the people who are there, you are nothing but a snob.
Yes,
now,
I imagine.
Now, in their work situation, there is a definite hierarchy. I mean, the superiority right down the line. Yeah, for example, a lower class worker would not have a better car than their superior. When you go out to have fun, you are expected, I mean, if you go there to dance, you're to dance with whoever asks you to dance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In this case, when she refused, he didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And we got up and we left.
We
had to in order to avoid a,
yes.
A little problem.
Now, in America, it's quite the reverse.
Yeah, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. But
in our social life, we have stratifications.
That's right. That's right.
And we maintain them, too.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. There wasn't any problem because we avoided it.
She would have
the Grand Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
When I went back 2 or 3 years ago and drove at Nuremberg, they paid the Germans to build as it had been before the war, and it was just wall-to-wall people, and it looked like old Germany, really, in
mm-hmm.
Nuremberg as I drove along there. I couldn't, when I was driving, pick out that Palace of Justice where I had been. I was driving. I couldn't take my eyes off the road.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't pick out the Grand Hotel either from there. But that was an interesting driving through there at that time.
Betty, what was your reaction when you came back to the States?
Well, it was exciting to see the Statue of Liberty and all. And on aboard the ship, you know, and talking with the girls who had been Red Cross or in my capacity there, civilian capacity, they all had such a wonderful experience, and we were all thrilled to be coming home to our good old United States. And spent a couple of nights in New York, had some things stolen out of my room. In New York, isn't it? Fine.
Mm-hmm.
Nice
first
welcome.
First theft you had
first,
experienced
first,
in several
that's right,
years.
That's right. And then on home. But when I got back, Mother having gone to St. Charles, Michigan, where you blink your eyes and you're out of it, one of the gals who came back with me, she said, you know, I'm not going to live in my little place where I was. She said, we knew friends in Boston. Some of the girls were going back there. And I had never been to Denver. We flipped a coin
mm-hmm.
as to whether we'd go to Denver or Boston. Ended up in Boston.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any problems adjusting yourself back to stateside civilian life after having been with the Army a year and a half or?
Well, of course, each day was exciting and...
Did you accept your friends and did your friends accept you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. There was no problem there.
Of course, I came to Lansing where I didn't know anyone.
Oh, yes.
But I think most of the girls who I have interviewed said they found it a little difficult because when they talked of their experiences, other people, they felt alone.
Yes, I think there's a lot in that.
Uh-huh.
People aren't interested
in
what you
they aren't interested in what we did
and what we did or
mm-hmm.
offered or served or they could care less.
I understand.
So that's why it's so the Women's Overseas Service League it's
a bond.
It's a bond
mm-hmm.
and it's so nice. And I certainly have no regrets ever having gone over there because I know I rendered a service
mm-hmm.
and I have letters to that effect,
mm-hmm.
and it was an education,
mm-hmm.
an absolute education.
Well, thank you, Betty. Do you have any more to tell us?
No, I think not.
We're
a lot
very
of
happy to listen if you do.
No, I think that will be fine.